Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello one and all, and welcome to After the Checkered Flag, my F1 special series here on the Behind the Glass podcast. I am joined, as always, by Paul Wallace from Supercars of London to review the French Grand Prix.
Is there a... No, that is as close to French as possible, isn't it?
France. Grand Prix François?
No. Francais. François is a French name. Oh.
Le Grand Prix Français. Oui, très bon.
Seb will be so proud.
Sebastian Delany will be cringing, I think. It's a weird one, isn't it? Because in the UK, we do all learn French, you know, up until a certain age. But as of today, I can't really speak any of it, but I do like to sort of, you know, pick out the odd word. Je ne sais quoi.
I think that's the Del Boy in all of us. Those Only Fools and Horses moment where he just comes out with the wrong French best time.
Then I go to France and I'm like, hello. Anyway, we are here to talk about...
Un hamburger? Yeah. And ketchup.
And ketchup, please, with some chips. We are here to talk about the French Grand Prix. If you're the first time tuning in to After the Checkered Flag, it is where we sort of review the races of the 2021 Formula One season. We kind of go through the finishing order in reverse order, working our way up through the positions before we finally end up on the podium. And we just talk about each driver's race and what we thought, and some drivers are more interesting
maybe,
than others.
Maybe give a little bit of improvements for the next race.
Oh, some feedback.
Well, we've both been seasoned single-seater drivers, as we've mentioned in previous episodes. Sure. Sam's driven a Formula One car. He doesn't like to mention it too much.
Well, you know, I could. If you have missed previous episodes.
God, I'm all over future ones, then what are lottery numbers?
If you've missed previous episodes, go back and check them out. We have reviewed every race of the year so far. However, we had to combine Portugal and Spain because they were pretty dire. And I do think going into the French Grand Prix, we both thought that this was going to be a pretty tough race to commentate on.
Yeah.
Because usually nothing happens at the French Grand Prix.
I mean, the fact that we had an exciting French Grand Prix only bodes well for the rest of the season, because if it can deliver on that stage, then I cannot wait for Austria.
I mean, honestly, this season just keeps getting better and better. And you're so right. I mean, of all the Grand Prix to sort of test whether this really is an epic season or not, it is the French Grand Prix. And hey, we're going to have some boring races ahead. There are often tracks that we think are going to give us unbelievable racing, and it tends to not
everyone
be one.
Monaco every year.
Yeah. But France, traditionally, or at least the few races that we've had at Paul Ricard, have been pretty processional.
Yeah, I think that there's also something in there's not that much danger. There's so much runoff that it doesn't feel like an Imola. You know, like if you come off the track at Imola, you're in the barrier about 180 mile an hour, or a street circuit like Baku. Monaco's slightly different. But I find when I'm watching Paul Ricard, if they come off, it's like a little spin, but all of those stripes are doing so much to stop the car or slow it down before the barrier comes in that it's almost unlikely you're going to get a safety car. We were really hoping for a thunderstorm.
Oh, my God, at one point.
But of course we didn't get it, but F3 did.
Yeah, exactly. Sunday morning, we all woke up to tweets being like, it's raining at Paul Ricard. Everyone's freaking out. And then it gets like an hour before the race. The rain has stopped. It's now dry. But, you know, you're right. There's something about watching that Paul Ricard circuit. Whilst it may be good to drive, and hey, it's been an unbelievable test circuit for Formula One teams and all kinds of motorsport over the years, on TV, it doesn't translate because it's hard to almost follow. You know, there's so many sort of lines and shapes. it gets a bit sort of, you know, blurry almost. I can't really work out where they're going to turn or not. I struggle to remember the track layout from the TV cameras.
I think it was Martin Brundle that said there was 130 odd different layouts.
It was purpose-built to have all these different configurations to be used for all these different kinds of testing and racing. And so it's impressive, but yeah, it's not the most visually spectacular to watch on TV. But it delivered a strategic wonder show.
Yeah, I mean, what that's a great way of describing it. Everyone was saying before how similar Paul Ricard is to Catalunya and Barcelona. Barcelona?
Our pronunciation is all over the place this morning. FYI, it's 9:30 on Monday morning. I think both of us need a little bit more caffeine, but anyway.
And it literally delivered near on the exact same race, just in a flip reverse, so that Red Bull could come back at Mercedes.
I mean, I sort of kind of want to skip from 20th to 4th just to like talk about that.
I did say to you just before we started the podcast, can we just skip out some of the back, some of the back markers?
Well, you know what? I feel like we're 6-7 races in now? So we're sort of 7 odd episodes
We're a third.
Third of the way through the season. Mm. Wow, time flies. But that means we're a third of the way through our beyond the chicken. What do I call it?
After the chicken flag.
Don't even know the name of my own series. I really do need that caffeine. But I think we've learned that we can kind of skip through some drivers' races.
Yeah, I think there was a couple of drivers this weekend that just seemed to either have like quite a good qualifying and then just went backwards. But there was also some drivers in this particular race that got zero TV coverage. Therefore, it was almost impossible for a viewer to follow.
There is one driver that I had no idea finished in the position they did that I'm like, wow,
who is that?
We'll come on to
it. Okay.
So let's
get strong.
No, but I've just seen where he finished and I didn't even notice that either.
Well, he is my favourite.
Just because you want his dad's money.
We need a sponsor for the pod.
Come on, let's get into it. Okay. People get annoyed by our waffle at the front. So yes, for those of you who've now skipped ahead to this point, welcome. 20th position, 19th position, Mazepin and Schumacher. Schumacher obviously did qualify in inverted commas, 15th.
He's a Ferrari driver already. Guys, I'm in! Crash!
He's learning well. But yeah, then did bin it. And you say that the stripes are sort of different, various, you know, asphalts, whatever they would call it, slowed the cars down. But actually, we did see quite a lot of crashes. I don't think it's as effective as it maybe was 20 years ago.
No. I still don't understand, because it's been carried through from Monaco, Baku, and now into this, or the weekend that's just gone. I don't understand why drivers are crashing so much in qualifying.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know if they're overdriving. I mean, we are seeing some of the sort of rookies, obviously Tsunoda, Schumacher, Mazepin, actually less than he was at the start of the year. But, you know, we are seeing a lot of uncharacteristic mistakes. Maybe the cars are sort of got to a development point now where they're on a bit of a knife edge. Mm. They're right at the sort of limit.
And it was a bit windy, wasn't it?
It was very windy. Tricky conditions, obviously. But yeah, Schumacher did bin it, as you say. He'd got into Q2, did then. Quickly, crash, secure that position. But yeah, as I say, the different sort of types of tarmac didn't do very much to slow him down and pretty serious damage, but didn't need a gearbox change. So started 15th, but unfortunately, as we sort of expected, went backwards. Mm. And, you know, good to see him above Mazepin. I do think Mazepin is starting to get, you know, calm down a bit and maybe get to grips with that car. The thing that I'm kind of loving, but it's also going a bit too far in my mind, is, have you noticed the Schumacher Vettel loving?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Like, to the point where they're like such best mates.
I think from Vettel's side, it's for show. I think Mick
do
is.
Do you?
Yeah, I think Mick is, I think he's just fairly chilled.
I think Mick is enamored with Seb, because obviously Michael and Seb, as in Mick's dad, and Seb had a very close relationship, and that was kind of like mentor mentee.
And I think Seb wants to be like, guys, like, just remember who my friend is. that's kind of what it's like, guys. Don't forget, I am friends with the great one.
I so disagree. I think it's a very genuine thing from both of them.
It's probably
but I'm just a bit like, oh, friends.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, come on, guys. Yeah. Like, at the end of the race, I think Mick took like Vettel over to his car, like, look, so this is where I sit. And then I changed gear here. And so it's like, lovely. Like, I'm just like, come on, you can be a mental mentee, but don't overdo it. Anyway, so yeah, they were expected of them. Same with Nicholas Latifi, 18th, Kimi Raikkonen, 17th. Charles Leclerc, 16th.
It's quite sweet that we're talking about him so early in the podcast. No. In all seriousness.
It's not.
I'm only doing it to wind you up because we talk about Ferrari. We're both very excited at the performance of their car this season. And it was just a bit weird.
Tough race for them. Tough race. I think, you know, going into practice and then qualifying, everyone was like, okay, we're back at a relatively normal circuit. We're not at the street tracks anymore. We expect Ferrari to sort of be solidly in that third or fourth position, fighting with McLaren like they were before, maybe a bit of Alpine or AlphaTauri, etc. And they were. I mean, in quali and in practice, like, yeah, oh my God, they're still kind of there. Like, they're still super competitive. This is great. Sainz got the one up on Charles. I was like, okay, cool. Like, it wasn't a fluke. It wasn't a street race fluke. And then in the race, they just went backwards.
It was literally like their tyres were delaminating every single lap. They just got consistently slower.
It happens through all the teams. Like, we see it, you know, tracks don't suit certain cars. And this seemed to be just one of those tracks. And I hope that was the case. I hope, you know, that it wasn't this blip. But if you think about it, all the way up until this Grand Prix, Ferrari have been competitive, especially when Charles Leclerc behind the wheel.
Yeah, well, the last two races, he put it on pole.
Well, there you go. So to see him down in 16th, a little bit sore. And I think they were both pretty frustrated, both of them out of the points. And in their fight with McLaren for P3 and the constructors, which what we're expecting it to carry on season long, pretty disastrous race for
them. He wouldn't have been at Jimmy's on Sunday night. So
which is a club in Monaco, for those of you who don't know. Paul with his rogue Monaco references.
I've literally referenced it in every podcast.
But maybe he will be there. That's glorious. Yeah. We win, we lose, we drink. moving on. Giovinazzi, 15th. Ocon, a very quiet weekend in 14th.
Very quiet. I feel like he's signed the contract and just gone, whatever.
Well, that's what we have to talk about, right? Because home race for the team, for him, he's had a good season.
The car looked quick at that track.
The car looked quick.
Well, it was quick in Alonso's case.
Well, there we go. And he's been outperforming Alonso, but been performing well, being competitive. We've kind of said, you know, Ocon's doing an all right job. And how, having said that, I've said for a while that I didn't necessarily see that he was doing enough to keep his seat, though. And I thought Gasly were going to be coming in there to boot Ocon out.
A lot of people did, because there was a lot of talk about that all weekend. And I think I saw an interview with Gasly where they were talking about saying, well, now that Ocon's got the Alpine seat, and that is a big commitment from Alpine.
3-year deal for Ocon.
That's basically saying there is no one going to be better than you coming up from F2 or in the current field that we see fit in that seat.
Yeah, they're pinning their hopes on him.
I think that's, I mean, is that just Toto Wolff?
Yeah, no, but this is, that's the thing, right? He's had a good season, but not good enough to warrant a 3-year contract extension. I still think, and I've said this for a while, that Alpine must have a joker up their sleeve where they really believe their 2022 car is
competitive,
the big deal. Like, I think they're thinking that they're going to be the Mercedes of 2014, because that's how I think they lured Danny Rick in. I think that's how they managed to convince Alonso to come back, because Alonso was never going to come back to do what he's doing, which is racing at the bottom of the points. He's coming back to win races, and they must have something, or they must really believe they've got this edge. And so locking in Ocon is because maybe they think, wow, if we're going to be podium positions or winning races next year, we can see on the telemetry that Ocon is going to be performing well, and people are going to come trying to steal him away. So let's lock him in.
At this point, can teams be using a simulator for the new car next year?
Of course. Yeah, absolutely.
So they could have this data that we have no access to, going, oh my God.
So listening back to some of the stories from the Mercedes year, you know, so the 2013 to 2014 when they're developing, or even the Braun year in 2009, for example, it's really interesting when you speak to engineers, because now with hindsight, you can say, like, did you know? Like, you must have known. And Braun year is actually more interesting, where they saw on their telemetry that they were a second faster than the 2008 car. And going into testing, everyone was saying, oh, you know, we've lost a second from our 2008 car, because that was the whole point, that it was supposed to slow the cars down. So they were like, okay, so this is weird, because like, we're faster and everyone else saying they're slower, like, can't be quite right. Went to testing and like literally went out and blitzed it from day one. And that's when they started to kind of get an idea. And so that's the thing, is you can have an idea. Like, Renault could be sitting there going, we are 5 seconds quicker than we are now. But you never know what your competition are doing. Yeah. So you can be as cock as you like in terms of your own development and progress. And that's what I think they are. But obviously, we don't know. Ferrari have already said that they're stopping development on the 2021 car. They're all 2022 now. Yeah. We don't know how long Mercedes. Toto was hinting at the fact that they're doing the same. So it's hard to say, but that's where I think they've locked in Ocon, because they think he's going to be hot property. Yeah. If they start maxing results, they think people are going to come trying to steal this guy. Let's lock him in.
It's quite exciting that we're talking about next year already.
I can't wait for next year. As good as this year is, I cannot wait. Yeah. Because you know what's weird? I was looking at the race, watching the race on TV, going, these cars do look a bit old now.
Really?
Yeah. I was looking at it going, they look a bit basic.
Yeah, but it was only like 2 years ago. When I see a two-year-old car now, and you see the differences between the current car, you're like, oh my God, is that what I watched?
Yeah. Like, the development is insane, yeah. Right? So I think when we see these new cars next year, it's going to be very exciting. Oh,
these ones are going to date. Very quickly.
Very quickly.
Depreciate very quickly on Auto Trader.
So true. You would know. So yeah, big news for Ocon. Congrats to him. I do think we still have the potential of seeing Gasly in that second Alpine seat.
I do.
Well, we just don't know what Alonso's going to do.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. Yeah. I don't think we know much about his contract. I think it was 2 years or one plus one. I'm not sure. But we'll come on to Gasly. Let's keep going. But yeah, Ocon, very quiet race, unfortunately for him. Tsunoda as well, another mistake in qualifying. Mm. And then a relatively quiet race, P13. Not much to say.
I mean, he started 19th, I think. I think Stroll's 20th.
No, Tsunoda started in the pit lane.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, because he had a gearbox change.
So, I mean, he's just overtaken the Haas, the Williams, and the Alphas.
And Leclerc.
Wasn't Leclerc in enough?
Yeah.
Might as well have been.
Don't say that. So, P12 is the surprise result for me. Who do you think it was?
P12. Pass.
Georgie Russell.
Really?
Yeah. Russell in P12. How did that go under the radar?
I have no idea.
I mean, I know it's not points, but that's a solid result.
That is.
I mean, say beating Tsunoda, Ocon, actually, Giovinazzi, Leclerc, Raikkonen, Latifi, Schumacher, Mazepin.
I looked at the final standings and I completely missed that.
Yeah. I think that's super impressive. And he was a Q2 guy as well, wasn't he? I think he was Q2, with Tsunoda having his failure. I think he scraped into Q2. So a very solid weekend from George. And we are all expecting imminent news.
Yeah, there is so much noise on social media about, because Toto mentioned him and Bottas in the same sentence talking about seats and all sorts.
Well, I think also Toto was like, I'm so fed up with people asking about this. Yeah,
I'm just going to start talking about it.
Well, like in Christmas, I'm going to announce the driver lineup. And everyone was like, what? And he's like, I'm only joking, guys. So we're all expecting it. There's a lot of speculation, but I think we're all expecting it. So let's wait and see. But the big conundrum is if Hamilton goes,
who takes that seat?
Yeah. But we've got to talk about Bottas, and that's coming up. So anyway, great result from George Russell. Good weekend. Carlos Sainz in 11th. You know, again, as we touched on it, Ferrari, not strong race for them, but a strong performance from Carlos, considering he outqualified Leclerc and finished just outside the points, but above Leclerc as well. So I think, you know, he continues to impress in that Ferrari.
He's slotted in so well.
Yeah. I think he's loving his life.
Yeah.
Talking about slotting in well, or just performing well, your best mate, Lance Stroll, P10. Where did he P19 started?
Yeah, he started at the back.
Started at the back, P10. And you know, positive signs from Aston Martin.
Mm.
They seem to have got to grips with that car.
There was some highlights watching the Vettel overtakes, watching Stroll overtakes. Yeah. Like, they were flying.
They were cracking on. And I think another good, strong performance from Vettel, P9 for him. Yeah. So I think that was good. And I think considering they both sort of, you know, didn't qualify particularly well, but they managed to get up into the points. And so, yeah, it's competitive, racy.
I think Vettel looks way happier as well.
Way happier.
There was a random post that I saw on my Explore feed on Instagram of him just... He literally looked like he must have spent about 10 minutes with one fan on the practice. And he was just stood there having a chat, took some photos. And I think if you're not comfortable in your seat, you're having a stressful weekend, or you're just not that confident going into the race weekend, you wouldn't do that. You'd literally be going straight back to your hotel room or wherever you're staying and not engaging at all, because you need to get into that headspace of trying to calm yourself down. So the fact that he was just chilling there, having a conversation with just an F1 fan, taking photos, he just looks happier.
I think happy in his own skin. I think he's enjoying the development. I think he's enjoying what he's bringing to the team now. I think he's feeling more comfortable in the car. I mean, how many laps did he do on that first stint?
Yeah.
He just kept going in a quick way. And then obviously bolted on some fresh tyres, overtook some people. And P9, congrats. Loving the sort of the form of Vettel at the moment.
Does it make you want to buy an Aston Martin?
No.
No?
No.
Not even the F1 edition Vantage?
No. Mm. Does it make you want to buy one?
No.
And actually, I get a bit annoyed when I see that. When
the DBX advert. It's just like, I mute it now.
For British TV viewers or Sky F1 viewers.
Yeah.
Oh my God, they play this Vettel and DBX Aston Martin advert between every sort of, whenever they take a break, it plays, and oh, it's so annoying.
It reminds me of the, I don't know whether you're going to remember this, and I don't know whether the viewers are, or the listeners, but do you remember like that really dark and that black, is it Black Widow?
The horse one?
No. It was about, or the Scottish Widows.
Okay.
It was just really like dark and depressing. like almost like hit you in the soul and with the voiceover and the visuals. And in this one, it's kind of the same, but it's Vettel talking about the journey.
The journey.
Where you have been is not a journey. Oh, I can't do a journey. it doesn't make me want to buy a DBX.
I'm so with you. I'm like, oh, guys, it's so annoying. Skip. But at the start procedure, the DBX pulled up at the back is the medical car. I was like, oh, what is that whale? Get rid of that. Moving on. Fernando Alonso, Jimmy Alfonso in eighth. Very competitive weekend for Alonso.
I reckon he enjoyed it.
I think he enjoyed it. He seemed good. I mean, again, the Alpine didn't seem to have that much race pace.
Yeah, there was a time where he went back a few places in quite quick succession. I think the McLarens were coming through.
Yeah.
And you could see that even just the speed difference between a front-running midfield car in the McLarens and the Alpine, which again goes back to hopefully next season, Alpine are going to whip out this absolute monster of a car.
We'll wait and see. But yeah, I think he's probably getting a little bit happier. He had a good race in Baku, right? I think he came out saying he enjoyed himself.
No idea.
I can't remember. So much we pay attention to what Alonso is doing. But I feel like he's starting to sound a little bit more positive. But it's still quiet for Alonso. You know, there's still not a lot of like hype and excitement about his return.
Numbers of his shirt sales at the moment.
Probably high enough in Spain. I reckon Carlos Sainz's shirts might be
with a Ferrari badge on.
That's exactly it. So P7, Pierre Gasly, home race. I mean, the man just continues to do great things. Qualifying fantastic, strong race. And this is what we're going to talk about. And actually, it did come up on commentary over the weekend. What does Pierre Gasly do now? And I think we spoke about it. We're seeing a lot of these top teams really lock in drivers. Of course, Mercedes, we still have a question. Could we see Gasly to Mercedes? It's not unheard of.
No.
You know, could we have Russell and Gasly at Mercedes? What a lineup. There's potential there. But take Mercedes aside, Red Bull, I don't think he's going back there. And
yeah.
I think Red Bull are going to be getting happier and happier with the Verstappen-Perez lineup. Ferrari locked in, as we know. McLaren locked in, as we know. Alpine looks like they might be locked in. So what do you do? And I think he must be thinking about that. Where, you know, how do I get back up to a really race winning? And he deserves it.
Yeah.
I mean, the man is pulling out results left, right and center. So
there was an interesting point that one of the commentators made on the coverage that was saying he's almost got, not that he's got nothing to lose, but his teammate is Tsunoda, who he's obviously comfortably beating at the moment. He's racing against a rookie in his own team, but also has nothing to lose in the sense that there is almost not that much expectation in the same, in comparable to when he was in the Red Bull seat, racing against Verstappen, firstly just being under that sort of pressure, but then also being around that environment of the Red Bull always needing you to deliver the results. And he is definitely at one with the current car. I don't know whether he is one car driver.
As in, like he just really bonds with that car and that car suits him.
But also the team around him, his competition within the team. I feel like he's quite comfortable being that number one driver. And I wonder whether if he was to move to Mercedes, whether he would be treated the same or whether George Russell would get all of the glitter and sprinkles.
I still question, well, that's not a topic. I still question if Russell will deliver at Mercedes. But anyway, my thing with Gasly is, you're right, where...
Like, where can he go?
At AlphaTauri, anything above sixth position is a victory.
Yeah.
He's won the race.
Yeah.
Whilst at Red Bull or at Mercedes, anything below first and you're a failure.
As a competitive driver, in Gasly's head, he wants to be up on that podium every single race weekend. He wants to be in one of those competitive cars that gets him or gives him a chance to get onto that podium. But at the same time, being in that position, we've seen it with Red Bull, the pressure gets to him and the environment.
Potentially, because there's so many factors that we don't know behind closed doors.
Yeah.
What was that Red Bull like to drive? We've seen it with Daniel Ricciardo. We've seen it with other drivers, with Vettel at the start of the season, struggling to get on top of a car. And then on top of that, you've got the politics, you've got the pressure, you've got the team always focusing on Max. So a thousand of it, and he wasn't given long enough, he wasn't given the chance to really prove his worth or his value before getting booted back down. Yes, he's performing fantastically. I think he is proving that he's got huge amounts of talent. But you're right, if he were to switch team to an engine that performs differently, to a car that drives differently, and to a team that has a different mentality or focus, will he adapt to that well and quickly enough to still do these results? And I think I mentioned in a previous episode of this podcast, it was Kamui Kobayashi saying, you know, the driver can only get to 110% of their ability when they are truly matched with the car. Every good driver can achieve 100%. Everyone in Formula One is achieving 100%. But Verstappen and Red Bull, Hamilton and Mercedes, Schumacher and Ferrari, they are so bonded and gelled with that car and that team. That's when they're able to deliver even more. And I think that's what Gasly's got at AlphaTauri. And so that's, you're right, that is the question.
And I think if he goes to another team and doesn't gel with it immediately, it will be in his head from race two, is this Red Bull all over again?
Yeah.
And I don't know whether he's mentally strong enough to get through that to then gel with another car, not discrediting his driving ability at all. I'm just basically speaking my opinion.
Yeah,
that's kind of the way that I think rather than strive, I just think he should continue with the faith in that team that he can get the odd podium. He can pick up a lot of points. Oh,
but surely, as a sportsman,
exactly.
Like that,
that's his mentality. Yeah. He was very vocal on the weekend, though, talking about that he wants that Red Bull seat. But
sounds a bit sad, isn't it?
Red Bull, yeah, because they definitely don't
see
need
you
him.
Mate. Yeah, we don't want you. Like, it's a bit like, I think he's chasing the wrong dream there, and I think it gives off the wrong message to other teams. It's all he talks about is getting back that Red Bull seat. I will get that seat back. I will do it. And it's a bit like, let it go.
Yeah.
Look at other options. Anyway, still just performing well.
Yeah.
Someone else
enjoying watching him.
Yeah, I enjoy watching him. That's why I wanted to get on the top team. Someone else performed well this weekend. Daniel Ricciardo.
Oh, that's
maybe the strongest weekend we've seen from him.
McLaren, I think. Definitely, you know, in the McLaren.
Qualifying, he's qualified. He has out-qualified Lando earlier in the year, so it wasn't his strongest qualifying. But as a race, we saw competitive go-get-ya attitude from Danny Rick, which we haven't seen all season.
Yeah. No, he was going after cars. That start was great.
It was super competitive
to hear. And I'm sure every F1 driver does, as pretty much every sportsman do. They go back and they review their own performance. They watch it back. And he was saying how in 2019, he got stuck in the middle. He got wedged in the middle and had a really bad turn one, turn two. And this time he was like, I was just looking for anything.
Yeah.
And it worked really well. Because I found that slot on the outside and I just didn't break.
Absolute legend. Yeah. But yeah, he seemed buoyed. He seemed positive. And there was that really interesting piece that Sky F1 did with McLaren. But you picked up on Danny Rick saying, these next three races, this triple header we've got, it's going to help me so much to find this rhythm, to really get on top of the car. They're much more traditional circuits. They're circuits I know well, and I can really like extract what I want to extract from this car. And it was, you know, we still expect him to be closer. We expect him to be closer and beating Norris. Maybe it's not going to happen, but it was a strong, strong race weekend for him and a really strong race for McLaren because, yes, Norris with an unbelievable strategy up to P5.
He was fuming in that first stint. Though. Oh, he was like, God. We're not on the right strategy. Raging.
Yeah. Just calm down, Lando. But, you know, he does continue to impress Lando. It's solid results. And I think he's still ahead of Bottas in the championship.
Yeah.
I mean, that's outrageous.
Yeah, but it was only from this race weekend's results that Bottas moved up ahead of
Leclerc.
I didn't want to like...
Well, Perez was in there at some point, but he's obviously jumped up now. Yeah. But you're right. I mean, Bottas. What a waste of time. But yeah, so McLaren really, really strong, really solid, because it didn't look like it from qualifying. And actually, they were quite downhearted after qualifying.
Yeah, but did you see Zak Brown pre-race? He was really confident.
Like, oh, really?
The way that I listened to him, I was like... They know something that we don't. He was like, oh yeah, like it's going to be a great race. We got a really good pace. And then Lando said something like, okay, we're not in a Red Bull. but here's where we want to be. And it was like right behind. So they kind of, they drove the race they were expecting.
Fine. Okay. So they obviously
it was great to see.
Had set up the car to have great race pace. Yeah. Yeah, great to see. And, you know, we love the return of McLaren, just like the return of Ferrari. Obviously, Ferrari
do
had
we
a
want
much
the golf
shorter
back?
Blip.
Yes.
I don't think I do want the golf livery back.
Really?
I don't love the orange of the McLarens. I kind of want like the West livery back from the 90s, if I'm honest. But, you know, I don't love the orange, but the golf one, I was just a bit like, yeah.
Oh, no, see, I thought it was
I really liked it. Yeah. Yeah,
I thought it was so cool driving around.
Each to their own.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
So here we go. We get into the top four where it gets very juicy because whilst we sort of went, oh, Bottas, what a talking point.
Yeah.
I mean, this is hilarious, I think, Bottas this season, because never have we seen so much personality from a Finnish driver, let alone Valtteri Bottas. If, as we all speculate, this is because he's been given the boot, he's been told, you're out, mate. You haven't performed.
Isn't it just us two that are speculating?
No. A lot of people are speculating this. If that's the case.
We definitely start the rumour.
People listen to this podcast, Paul.
We are the rumour.
Why haven't we seen this Bottas before? Why, of all our, it's version 2.0, it's version 2.5. Why was this not version 1.0 Bottas?
Yeah.
He should have been this hot-headed, this angry, this vocal from day one. Maybe he hasn't been given the boot. Maybe he's just frustrated and fed up with the way he's being sort of treated because the team are kind of shoehorning him into a number two position. But as I've personally said before, you end up being a number two driver if you're not competitive enough to be considered a number one driver. You know, you've got to be...
Or even equal. Yeah.
You've got to be there fighting tooth and nail, taking victories away, being competitive. And over the last 5 years or so, Bottas hasn't done that. We've seen it over and over again. He just hasn't done it. Mm. So that's why, sorry, Valtteri, that you're being used like that. but this amazing fury from him.
He was absolutely furious.
Now, we disagree on some point. So basically, long story short, Mercedes basically kept him on a one-stop strategy to kind of safeguard Hamilton from a sort of, you know, a fighting Verstappen. Bottas was calling for a two-stop strategy, I think, very early on in the race, realised that it was going to be a two-stop.
I think he was the first driver that recognised it.
Potentially.
Or at least that's what we heard in terms of the team radios.
And so, you know, he was then very frustrated towards the end of the race where he obviously went backwards and ended up finishing off the podium, being overtaken by Verstappen and Perez. Now, we disagree on a point here because when Verstappen got past Bottas, in the build-up to this amazing, which we still need to come on to, this amazing sort of 20-lap chase, the sort of one hope that Hamilton fans, and Mercedes themselves were holding on to was that Bottas might be able to hold up Verstappen for a few laps. And that would have actually bought Hamilton
a little bit of time.
And potentially the race victory. But it's not what happened. Bottas.
I actually think Bottas held Lewis up for longer at Barcelona than he did Verstappen at Paul Ricard.
Okay, so you text me straight away when Verstappen got through saying he basically did that on purpose. Like Bottas was just like letting Verstappen go like, oh, sorry guys, I tried to defend, but the tyres are gone. Yeah. So you genuinely believe he made it as easy as possible for Verstappen?
No, I don't think he made it as easy as possible, as in I've just been waved the blue flag, pass me. But at the same time, I think at the part of the track that he was at, he could have made it a little bit more difficult, but at the same time, I'd like to think I know his mindset in that moment, as if to be like, whatever, these guys aren't listening to me. And you deal with it, Lewis.
See, I totally disagree, because I think Bottas defended his position harder than Hamilton.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He was way more racist. I mean, he tried to go round the outside, or at least do something at whatever it's called, Sin Corner, which is the 200 mile an hour right-hander. Like, Bottas was still there in it, some shape or form, getting onto the marbles. Like, that was semi-impressive. Hamilton was like,
whatever. Yeah. Yeah, but again, it was at that part of the track where Lewis was just like,
nothing I can do. DRS, better tires.
Yeah. And he just cruised past him. And Lewis said after, he was like, well, if I'd defended really aggressively there, he would have just got me on the next bit anyway. So what was the point?
I think that's what we're going to talk about when we get onto Lewis. You know, there was definitely a championship mindset, an elder statesman mindset from Hamilton. But I disagree. I think Bottas did try his best, I think, to keep that position, because I think he knew if he let Verstappen through that Perez would be right on his tail as well. So I think Bottas was fighting hard, but was just like,
I've got nothing. Held off Perez for longer, though.
Yeah, fair. Verstappen was on a charge, and anyway, I mean...
How demoralising, though, would it have been for Valtteri to obviously have been so vocal about the two-stop? This is a two-stop strategy, blah, 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 blah. And then having Perez go past him, and then they have brought him in for the fastest lap.
Oh, my God.
Can we talk about that? Because Toto said, we were hoping for a Perez penalty, which was why we didn't bring Valtteri in to go for fastest lap. I think that is a cop-out excuse.
1,000,000%.
Like, can you imagine a debrief if they had brought him in for the fastest lap? I had to be like, oh no, we did do the two-stop strategy, just like not when you called it.
Yeah, we did it with one lap to go. I think Bottas must be fuming. As I say, whether he's got the boot or not, I think though he must be very unhappy.
If he hasn't got the boot at the moment,
he's on his way to get it. You
would think that he's going to go out and try and get another seat or another drive.
Because he sounds furious with the team the whole time. Yeah. I mean, it's enjoyable, but the problem is, it's enjoyable to listen to because it's entertaining. The problem is, he's still not delivering results. And I know Bottas fans will be saying, well, because Mercedes is screwed, he wanted the two-stop. But, I'm sorry, Hamilton did somehow manage to drive his race as tough as it was. Like, yes, it was the wrong strategy. Yes, it was bad strategy calls, or they were outsmarted. But Bottas, just be quicker, mate.
Yeah.
Just be quicker.
Because even in the first stint, when I text you and said, oh, like, Bottas was probably wrapped a rope around Verstappen's car. Lewis was just dictating the pace for the tyres. Perez was obviously on his own strategy. He had been told, these are the times that you need to do, which is why those three drove off. But then as the race progressed, Bottas wasn't attacking. He wasn't giving off any sort of, oh, actually, he's got this.
There was
never a moment where you're like, hold on a minute.
You thought there was a threat from Bottas.
He's eaten his porridge.
Yeah. He was there or thereabouts, keeping the pace, but it just never looked, you know, you never saw him going, oh, Bottas could win this.
Yeah.
Like, he was there, but you didn't think he would win it. You thought Perez might have won it. The
Merck strategies did screw his race.
Yes. Well, so let's come on to strategies, because that's what it's really all about. Perez in third, that's the kind of genius one-stopper. And this was where Red Bull went into this race really switched on because, you know, I think both Red Bull and Mercedes over the last few years have made some strategic blunders, have got some things wrong, have been outsmarted by others. But going into that, doing the long play with Perez gave Red Bull options. And I think that shows the confidence they're starting to have in Perez.
And the car.
They're starting to see his ability, to manage tyres, what the car could do. And they knew, we can keep him out there for a long time and he will come into play at the end of the race. And screw up Mercedes' heads a bit, because they're going to have to keep an eye on him because he's going to be doing something different.
Which is what Christian Horner has said for the last 2-3 seasons with the Albon and Gasly era.
It's all they want.
Yeah. They just want to put another car in between the Mercs or just behind Verstappen to just let him do his own race.
And just to distract the Mercedes and create a problem. And that's exactly what he did. So great race from Perez. But that was, as I say, the starter of Red Bull have come here really trying to win this race. They haven't gone, it's a Mercedes track, which it has been the last few times that we've been there. I think Hamilton had led like 99.9% of laps at Paul Ricard since F1 had returned. So, so Perez, great strategy, great drive from him. P3, another podium. I'm excited for this. I think we're going to start to see the real strength from Perez.
Did seem a bit weird to have both Red Bull drivers on the podium. Did you not look at that and be like, oh.
Yeah, no, I totally did.
I haven't seen that.
When are we going to see, when we see the next one too, I'm going to be like, oh, wow. Like Mark Webber and Sebastian Vettel, what's going on?
It was really quite strange.
Yeah. I'm so with you there. It's been a while. Yeah. But nice to see and say.
Yeah.
Nice to see Perez being able to deliver the results. So, P1 and P2, Verstappen and Hamilton. Mm. The championship battle continues of the century. So, let me get your take first. Who won this race? Did Red Bull win this race? Did Verstappen, did Mercedes lose this race? How do you analyze it?
That's a great question. Okay, so the first, I've got a bit of a confession.
Oh, so I was asleep.
This is the first time, I think, in the last 5 years, that during Q3, after their first banker lap, and you looked at the times, I spoke to my girlfriend and I said, who's going to get pole? She was like, Verstappen, obviously. And I was like, no, that's who you want. Yeah. Who do you think is going to get pole? Verstappen. And then I sat there and asked the same question to myself, and it was the first time that I didn't have the belief that Hamilton would be able to pull the lap out of the bag. And I was a little bit worried.
No.
I'm not going to lie. Interesting. Going into the race, obviously, Verstappen made that mistake into turn two, or locked up and lost the rear in turn one. And then I was like, oh, here we go. Lewis is just going to drive off. Then, was it Mercedes' race to lose? Yes. Did Red Bull outsmart Mercedes? In a way, I almost feel like everyone came out of that race and said, oh, the undercut was so much more powerful than we thought. Like, Red Bull did the undercut for the first time. How did Mercedes not realize how powerful it was to then go and put them onto a two-shot strategy like they did in Barcelona? I feel like the drivers did everything they could. They drove the wheels off the car, both of them. Verstappen obviously showed just what a world champion he is by the way that he drove and the way that he was able to build that or sort of like diminish that gap. That's a good question. I would say it was, I think Red Bull won that race.
Okay. Clever strategy and great driving by Max?
Yeah. I mean, by Perez and Max, I think they both drove how they needed to drive to get maximum points for that race. Lewis did everything he could because there was a moment where Max was catching Lewis by like 2 seconds a lap. And then all of a sudden, you realize, oh, actually, Lewis was slowing down to just preserve those tires a little bit more. Are we going to see the genius in the tire management? And all of a sudden, there was a couple of laps where Lewis was quicker than Max. And we were like, oh, hold on, Max's tires have gone, because he was putting on old tires from qualifying rather than fresh tires that Lewis had in Barcelona. So it was just all playing out. And there were so many moments in my head of conversations that we'd had. Oh, if it was the other way around in Barcelona, Lewis wouldn't have let Max overtake. And then obviously it happened. I was expecting it. I just didn't think Lewis had, I think he was a bit of a sitting duck. And overall, I think Red Bull won that race. I think Mercedes threw it away.
Yeah, I think that was definitely what I wanted to pick up. It was Tony who I was talking to. I can't even remember if it was during a proper Behind the Glass podcast or just off air. And he was like, thing is though, Hamilton's the best. Like, this was speaking about Barcelona when Hamilton chased down Verstappen and overtook him with
however many laps to go. But also Bahrain, where Lewis was putting the car where Max wanted.
So, of course, the actual racing, you know, when they went wheel to wheel and Max went a bit wide and had to give the position back and all of these things. But specifically that Barcelona race where Mercedes pulled out the strategy out of the bag and Tony was just going crazy. Like, that's why Hamilton's the best. Like, Hamilton's a mate. Look at what I said. Thing is, that was Mercedes. Like, Mercedes won that race. That was brilliant strategy. Yeah. He had such a time. Yeah, but if it was the other way around, Max would never be able to catch and overtake Lewis. Like, and I said, no,
yeah,
it's not the case. And thankfully we got to, I'm seeing Tony later, like I'm going to go, ha, idiot. Because, yeah, there were a couple of factors here. So firstly, at the beginning of the race, when Max made that mistake, and then listening to him on the radio, I was like, huh. Because I've always thought that over a championship season, and we're seeing it right here and right now, does Max have the mental aptitude to take on
for a whole season,
Lewis Hamilton, you know, and I'm not saying Lewis like, I'm saying seven-time world champion. The man has won championships consecutively for 50 years, it feels like. It's all he knows how to do, and he knows how to do it so well. And he's also lost championships. So over a year, you've got to be so strong and smart. And he's learned from, this Hamilton learned from the likes of Alonso and Button, who race in a very different way. And even Rosberg about, you know, to playing the long game. And I thought when Max went off and then listened to a bit of his radio and just getting a sense that he was a bit frustrated, I was like, huh. Mm. Okay, so we're starting to see here that Max is still a little bit hot-headed, a little bit, but was driving the race into the drive. I think in the first stint, I kind of thought, okay, Lewis has got this. Like, yeah. We're like, this is, it's probably fine. It's going to be a cool race. Yeah. But, and then when the undercut worked, I was like, oh, wow. Mm. Like, we've got a race on our hands, thank God. Yeah. I kind of thought Lewis had it though, because they were, basically, he was within a second. Both the Mercedes were within a second of Red Bull. At that moment, it was incredible because they were all pulling away from the rest of the field at such an insane rate of knots. But I was like, if both Mercedes are within a second, like, or within 2 seconds of Max, I was like, that means they got a solid pace advantage. They just can't get past at the moment. Then they started to drop back a bit. I thought, okay, fine. So Lewis has been clever enough to save some tires to attack again. If it remained a one-stop strategy, I think maybe we would have had the same outcome, because I just think the Red Bull was hard to overtake in a straight line, but I do think Lewis would have sort of saved some tyres and come at him again at the end of the race, and maybe we would have seen a Hamilton victory. I don't know. But the point being, yes, Red Bull outsmarted Merck, pulled the trigger first, which is what Mercedes should have done. But, oh my God, did Lewis manage to try and evade the inevitable for as long as possible, somehow save those tyres, or manage to eke out performance from those tyres that no one thought he would have. And we saw Bottas going backwards. Okay, fine, Bottas only finished 12 seconds off Hamilton. So Hamilton did an amazing job, but it was 12 seconds further down the road that Verstappen had to travel to catch. And you're right, where at times at the beginning of the stint, it was 2 seconds per lap, but by the end, it was minuscule sort of gains. The thing that disappointed me was how sort of little fight Lewis did put up, because, and I think this is a sign of him being the elder wise. And I think he's went, it's inevitable. He's going to get past me.
Do you think if the Baku result was different and Lewis hadn't have gone off at turn one at the restart, as in if Lewis had picked up the points at Baku, how do you think Lewis would have reacted in that situation there? Do you think, I'm just going to bank these P2 points?
I think no differently. I think on Friday, Mercedes thought they were well off the pace. Mm. And I think Lewis was happy to get a P2, all things considered. And I think he has just learned, and he just knows that that was a victory that was going to be hard to save, even with one lap to go.
He was happy with P2.
I think he was like,
in general,
I run the risk of, I think he's wary of Max.
Yeah.
I think he thinks that he could have a crash with Max. And I think he just thinks, let him go. Score the 2 points. Sorry, score the second. Score the
you really don't know the point scoring, do you?
It's so confusing. Bag the second place. I'll have my day. Like, we outsmarted them in Spain. They've outsmarted us here. It is what it is.
Do you think Mercedes and Lewis are hoping for another DNF for Verstappen? Do you feel like that's the only way that they're going to...
No, I don't think it's the only way. I think the season will continue to ebb and flow. I think Red Bull are on a real roll right now. We've seen in Austria, Max has really pulled out some results over the years. We've also seen Mercedes perform very well there. I think Mercedes are confident in themselves and in Hamilton's ability. I think Toto hinted on the fact that they've turned quite a lot of their attention to 2022. And
do you not think that's quite mad?
I don't think it's mad, because I think probably what it means is there is a small contingent still working on 2021. There will be some updates coming. I think what he was insinuating is that we will let go of some race victories. We're not giving up on the championship. We're still here to fight for the championship.
Do you think he's bluffing to Christian Horner? Because I just feel like Red Bull are looking at that to be like, okay, we'll just put a little bit more than what they're doing into our car this year. Because I think Red Bull are so hungry for a world championship and a constructors' championship.
100%.
I can't see them not throwing as much money as they can into this season just to take that away from Lewis. And I don't know whether Toto's playing like an unbelievable mind game on Red Bull to be like, oh, we're not really that fussed about this season. We'll sandbag during practice. And then all of a sudden, because Lewis's second lap in qualifying would have got pole if Max hadn't have improved.
Yeah, but Max did.
Yeah. But that's, but like, you know, like the out of almost like they're almost out of contention every single practice. And you're like, oh, Mercedes really are off the pace. Like, look at Baku.
So they're probably testing 2022 parts. But so, no, you're right. I mean, it's obviously a hard car to set up and find the balance of, but it would be super naive of them, or I think very un-Mercedes of them, to fight tooth and nail for a 2021 championship to threaten their 2022 dominance. Because if you look back in 2009, the last major rule change, I mean, of course, the introduction of the hybrid era, Ferrari and McLaren were fighting tooth and nail to the end of the year, you know, with that was Hamilton, Massa, and all the development. It was so much aero development back then, and their 2009 cars were both crap. And I think Mercedes, as a brand, as a group, as Toto Wolff, as I say, I don't think they're giving up. If you think of a company of 1,000 people, when maybe usually you've got 600 people working on the current season and 400 looking at next year, maybe that's switched vice versa. And therefore, what he's saying is that, you know, the rate of development is not going to be as much as previous years, but we know there's developments coming. And if we have to sacrifice a few races along the way, we will bag the points because we know we've got upgrades coming. We know tracks are going to suit us better. And we know we can keep within a couple of tenths of Red Bull. That's what I think. I think he knows it's going to be a really hard fought championship.
I feel like that's so risky when you look at the reason why Lewis has gone in with a 1-year contract, because he wants that eighth world championship. He wouldn't be in that Formula One car if he doesn't.
Of course.
And at what point does Lewis go, guys,
give me more.
Give me more. Like this is a little bit of a squeaky bum time. We are 30 points behind Max Verstappen. I'm in this seat for my eighth world championship. And at the moment, we've got 70% of our staff working on the next year's car, which I might not be in.
Yeah, but I think Lewis has the belief in himself and maybe the team.
But I don't. I've lost it.
You don't. You're freaking out, Sam. Because it's been so long since Lewis has been threatened. And realistically, you've only really been into Formula One whilst he's been dominant. You don't know what it's like to see Lewis losing. I was there in the dark years.
No. So was
2010,
I.
2010.
So was I.
2010, 2009. 2010,
I watched him make all of those rogue mistakes. Yeah.
But the thing is, I think he's been in this position before with competitors, whether it was Rosberg, whether it was Alonso in previous years, whether it was Vettel in the Ferrari. He knows what it's like to go behind. He knows how a championship works. It's one race. It's 12 points. He's got time. Like, I think if it gets to Monza and, you know, September, October time, and they are losing pace, because the thing is, pace deficit isn't huge.
No.
They are there or thereabouts. Yeah. They got outsmarted on strategy. That's it. And he put his hand, we got outsmarted. Like, what can we do? We got outsmarted. He was on much fresher tyres. There's nothing we could do at that point. I think if Mercedes were qualifying 6th, 7th or 8th every race, and they were finishing in those positions 30 seconds off the pace, I think Lewis would be freaking out. But they're not. If they're not first, they're second.
They're doing just enough.
Always, you know, in a car park at the Baku Grand Prix. But, you know, like, they're doing just... And that, I think that's... He just knows he's just got to deliver. And that's what it is, rather than Mercedes throwing the complete toolkit to sort of get them back to being a second ahead. They're just a bit like, we've got to focus on next year. We are within that tenth of a window, and we'll stay within that tenth of a window. And
believe in yourself,
Lewis. You've got to go win it.
We believe in us.
And Bottas is like, I can't drive this thing,
even though he had Lewis's chassis.
Yeah, don't get into the whole chassis gate. I can't bear all that stuff. Anyway, it was a fascinating French Grand Prix. A very different, you know, excitement in terms of, you know, all about the strategy, but it gave us a race that we could all tune in and enjoy. And we now have this doubleheader coming up, the Styrian and the Austrian Grand Prix.
Love that circuit.
I love that circuit. Mm. We have seen some really good races there in recent years. Also some processional ones, so let's see what we can do. But it does mean that you're going to get a triple header from us.
Boom, boom, boom.
Dun, dun, dun. Today, next Monday, and the Monday after. Let me just check my calendar. Yes, I can commit to all of that. Can you commit to all of that? Monday the 28th and Monday the 5th.
Absolutely.
Brilliant. So we will be back with you next week to review, I guess it's the Austrian first and then the Styrian?
I don't know which way round. Do you not think they should, like, do the track reverse. Or
I know. When they're doing double headers, that's what I think. Do the track reverse or do a different layout or do something. Like that was
can
great.
They do it, can they, I don't think they can do another layout there.
No, but the Bahrain, that's why it's so great at Bahrain to have the different layout. But you're right, do it in reverse. God, turn one in reverse would be nuts. That downhill. but yeah, let's wait and see. Let's see if Mercedes can turn the tide on Rebel at their home track. That would be pretty mega statement if Mercedes do walk away with two wins in Austria. But yeah, very exciting, and the season continues to be mega. So if you are enjoying After the Checkered Flag, make sure to subscribe. If you're watching here on YouTube, turn on notifications so you don't miss those future race reviews. If you're listening, keep listening on whatever platform you're listening on. Paul is Wallace PJW on most social media platforms these days, and he does tweet and Insta story about F1 occasionally. They're always a bit dodgy, those tweets, but anyway.
Very occasionally.
Very Hamilton biased.
But I'm picking it back up. Yeah. So, follow.
Tune in. And I'm obviously seen through glass on most platforms as well. So we will catch up with you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.